welcome to another episode of GT Radio. This is Tino, and tonight I have a fantastic show for you. A guy who's been a friend, and he's just a smart guy when it comes to a lot of things. Welcome, Chris Jenner.
Who else did you invite on this?
Yeah, we should get a couple more people to have a party. Oh, man. So, some announcements today, right? Give us the big news, right?
Yeah, so how is it officially stated? I have to look at that. Hold, please. Merger announcement. I don't have the official line from Caesars. Hold, please. But anyway, Eldorado.
Go ahead.
There. Okay, here we are. This morning we announced Caesars Entertainment has entered into a merger agreement with Eldorado Resorts to create a new company, which will be called Caesars Entertainment. We are merging with Eldorado Resorts, a great organization with fantastic leadership, and that's about as far as we know, as I know, and as far as I can communicate, and looking forward to it, and looking forward to keeping on doing amazing things in the world of email and digital marketing.
The interesting thing is that, you know, with the merger, the penetration of this company now, I mean, you're going to probably be everywhere, right? I mean, it'll be what, over 80
It'll be
casinos?
The largest, like yeah, over 60. And
60, yeah.
I believe it now becomes the largest casino company, I believe.
Interesting. Like, yeah. I think it was $7.8 billion. That's really interesting. Do you think that from a marketing perspective, what does that do to your brain when you're thinking about that? Because you're going to be at the forefront of that, right? Like,
Yeah, I know we run a pretty advanced shop here at Caesars, and I can't imagine that any of that would necessarily change. Basically, it just gives me more opportunity to share the wealth with others who we may not have had the chance to speak with yet, with exciting new properties that'll be coming on board, so on and so forth, and just, you know, bringing people into a true life cycle, a journey of communications that we can do with them. And at this point, I don't know what I don't know, but it'll be exciting to have more of an opportunity to get the word out about all the great things. You know, it is our mantra. We inspire grown-ups to play, so that's what it's all about here in the gaming industry. It's a good time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing all the consolidation that's happened. I mean, even in the last year, let alone the last three or four, which you've seen the really explosive consolidation in our business. Yeah. And having that kind of reach is going to be pretty remarkable. Just put it this way: you'll have a lot of great data.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
That's going to be a huge database. Not that you have a small one now, but
it's going to be
pretty massive. Yeah, by any means. So tell us a little bit about your roots. Tell us a little bit about Chris Jenner.
Sure. So.
You know, where did you grow up? You know, that kind
I'm
of
from
stuff.
Everywhere. Yeah. Ironically, I did grow up in Las Vegas, but I left at the ripe old age of 16 years old, moved to Utah, of all places, where I went to college, you know, started my initial career there, and actually in the mid-late 90s started getting into the world of digital marketing, which was crazy back then. The internet was brand spanking new. No one had heard of Google or Yahoo. The search engine at the time was web crawler, and HTML was just a baby. And so really I was just always intrigued and enthralled by that. So I started figuring out how to view source code, self-taught in HTML, started building websites, but then jumped into corporate America and leveraged that skill set to, you know, help build out some corporate websites and so on and so forth. But that's also when I got into the world of email marketing and leveraging data, because I came from a direct mail background. While I was I was tinkering on the weekends, building websites, doing things of that nature. My real job was running the direct mail for a telecommunications company. And so very familiar with the world of data and, oh, here's what we've got to do to get response and what things can we test into. And, of course, the problem with – I shouldn't say the problem, but one of the challenges of direct mail is that it takes a while to really track those results and know what you're seeing. And that's why digital was so exciting to me, because you just immediately can see results. And so as soon as emails started becoming prevalent, and I think it was maybe my second job where I was actually assigned an email address, and that's where I was building their corporate website, and I got into the world of email marketing. And this was before canned spam. While everyone was, it makes it seem like, oh, it wasn't until canned spam that people were socially responsible with email marketing, which is not true. Of course, everyone was doing the right thing previously. It's just that you had a lot of violators sending all their porn emails and so on and so forth. But anyway, so we were, you know, even though it was pre-canned spam, we, of course, were doing opt-ins and so on and so forth and just talking to that audience. And that's where you started seeing the power of, wait a second, I can see these results in almost real time and know what worked, what didn't work, how I can tweak something. And you just started diving through those ideas of how can I grow this channel and make it better, more efficient, more effective. So anyway, left there, left Utah, moved to Dallas, and that's where I started at Hilton Worldwide to help them with their fledgling email, which was two text-only emails, one for the Hilton brand, one for the DoubleTree brand. And I did – this was 2000, straight up 2000. And so I built that into its email marketing division that it is now, where teams are in the UK, went from, again, just those two text-only emails to then, of course, brought them into the world of HTML, brought them into the world of sending reservation confirmation emails and cancellation emails and marketing emails by bringing more brands on. And then while there, and it, back to that desire to how do we optimize what we're doing, help to develop Caesars. Not that I did this on my own. I'm not going to take credit for this. We had an agency and whatnot, but actually developing a CRM engine for Hilton Worldwide, which I want to say was called C360. I don't know. But anyway, through the technology partner that Hilton was using at the time, and started really then seeing, okay, now I know more information about these customers because we had data in a database. I just wasn't necessarily accessing it. And so we could start then testing against, you know, oh, hey, we're going to send this offer out, but we know we've got these people who are empty nesters, yet these people are young and haven't started a family yet. Oh, these people have a family. So started toying with the ideas of creative of, well, if it's an older couple, let's put an older couple in an image. Yeah, and just playing with demographics and things of that nature to optimize behavior, but then also still leveraging all of the behavioral data we know from their engagement within the channel. And really just driving that from a – I think when I started at Hilton, email was bringing in like $100,000, $150,000 a year. And by the time I left, what I'd grown it into was driving north of $250,000, pushing on $300,000 a year just through optimizing what we're doing, opening up the door, and actually marketing to people and letting them know what they wanted to hear when they wanted to hear it. And then so after I got that up to where I liked it, where I was, you know, I was looking at what else can I do? What else can I play around with? That's really right about the time that Caesars had this great opportunity. And so I jumped over to Caesars to do a similar yet different thing. So, of course, by now we're at 2014. And Caesars was just in a very still direct mail heavy focused marketing phase, and they just weren't seeing the results from email that they thought they should have. And the challenge behind that was that they were actually not doing it right, and not in a bad way. It's just those who were doing it came from very direct mail focused way of thinking. And so when they send a single direct mail piece, they said, well, let me just send a single email piece instead, and I'll get the same results. But as we all know, those are two completely different channels. You've got something, you've got your Bed Bath & Beyond coupon that sits on your countertop all week long screaming at you, hey, 20% off, come get that toaster oven you need, and if you don't do it fast enough, then it's going to drop down to 10%. But that sits there. I see it every day, or it's hung on my fridge, wherever you put your direct mail.
Yeah.
Whereas an email comes into my inbox, and maybe the exact same message, I might see it. I might be busy, and other emails come in, and it disappears. And if you only send that once, just like that one direct mail piece, you're not going to get the same response. And so I started heading down the path of we need to work on frequency. It needs to be a message that people are seeing potentially a couple of times. And then, of course, you need all those iterations within of ensuring that you're not over mailing. So if someone has engaged with it, you don't have to talk to them about it anymore. They've already engaged. They've done what you needed them to do. And so move on and turn off the spigot, if you will. And came into Caesars to help kind of rethink the channel, the email marketing channel, and then, of course, in the process, take it from it was a antiquated email service provider we were using and moved us into a one of the, if not the most robust email service provider out there, where we can do a lot of things with data and so on and so forth, and really make a lot of our communications data driven. So taking us from where we could send about 250 individually built emails, highly targeted, of course, but 250 emails every month to now almost 2,000 that are, again, highly targeted. But that's all done on a shoestring budget with not a huge amount of resources to do that. So really letting the data become the hero in this story and letting it drive all the different iterations, customizations, so on and so forth. Man, yeah. I didn't take a breath in there, Tino. Did I bore you to death?
That's good. No, you never bore me. You always enlighten me, and I think that everything that you said is smack on, and I think you guys are so ahead of the curve, driving so much revenues with so much ease. Well, not ease, but relatively speaking, with the
we work hard to make it look easy.
Exactly. One of the things that you talked about when you got this T360 CRM tool, whatever it was called. What was it called again?
C as in Charlie, as in customer 360.
Right.
Is what the internal name of it was.
I like that. What kind of information did you get, which was so revealing, number one? And
well,
number two, these are loaded questions, of course, you know that. Number two, were you surprised by the information you got, and was it the information you were looking for?
Sure. So what we got was not a lot. It was merely what we had in the database about these customers. It wasn't even sophisticated at that level. It was merely, hey, now I see their name instead of just getting an email address. I see that they tend to stay at this particular property. I know where they're located. You know, things just very base level demographic
very
information.
Basic
not
stuff. Wow.
Exactly. I wasn't getting.
That was a lot more than you had before, because before you had none, right?
Exactly. So coming from nothing to a little bit of something allowed for great things. But then, of course, as time goes on, it's like, well, God, what more could we be doing? How can we – let me get at some more information. What other information is available that I can then surface for my channel? Because that's the thing. Part of that C360 was – it wasn't just for the email channel. It was, for all general marketing. So, but anyway, it's what other – data could I use, could I leverage? And so what I find of value is, like I was saying, it's that information to know, where do you regularly travel? If I only ever see that you stay at our properties in Chicago, and I see that you come there every other week, and then I start seeing that you aren't coming every other week again, something has clearly changed in your life. So that leads me to prompt an email to reach out to be like, hey, how is everything going? You know, i.e., did Marriott just steal you, or has your work changed? Do you travel elsewhere now? What can we help with? You know, so on and so forth. Because what we don't always have in that world of hospitality, and this is back in the hotel days, is we knew that pretty much the number one reason someone stays at a property is location. It is near where they need to be. And in fact, I can't remember who's doing it right now, but you see these hotel ads and they're always like, oh, and I was only 10 minutes away from whatever hotel, and oh, only 10 minutes away from, and they're playing into that whole theory because they know that people want to be extremely close to where they are. And so back to that point, if I see that person fall off my radar, either, you know, I need to reach out to the local hotels. Was there a new property that popped up that might be closer to where they were, or, you know, what's going on, what has changed? But alternatively, you know, it could be a life change event, so on and so forth. So we had this journey, this life cycle series that would go out and try and elicit that information, not that it's going to get fed into the database, but to try and get at, hey, what can we do differently to get you back in the fold? We miss you. Come on back. And, you know, so that would have been, back to your question, would have been very helpful to get that type of information of where they're actually – Go ahead.
A lot of that data that you were getting was some of the most important stuff. So it's like you got the stuff on the top, which is like the really important stuff, and then all the granular stuff that takes a little bit more thought. Now, how much of that granular kind of data is processed by machinery, and how much of it is you guys coming up with strategies?
Fine question. It depends. So the data is the data is the data. I'm not saying we're coming up with any of that. And the strategy is how can we leverage that data? So it's really learning what's available to us and then determining if I can make decisions out of that. So a great example there would be, you know, lookalike modeling. I may not, as a human, value or realize that the type of shoes that someone purchases means anything. Because, hey, guess what? I work for a casino company. I don't, you know, maybe shoes isn't, that doesn't pop up on my radar. I would more like to know, oh, what kind of sports are you into? Oh, do you like to play games? Do you like tables? Do you like slots? That type of information. But there could be something, again, not that I would know, but an AI could figure out in doing lookalike modeling that says, wait a second, when you put these factors together and find some of these deeper nuggets of data and look at those, we actually start seeing a pattern develop, and you actually want to find people who prefer Adidas over Nike, for example. So really the strategy – they work hand in hand. It's a dance, if you will, to figure out, okay, what's available. Let's start thinking, what can we do with that? How can that drive the strategy? And then sometimes the strategy says, well, I would really like to look into X. Let's get at that data. And other times, hey, I see data Y. How does that? Oh, wait, that just triggered a thought type thing. A dance.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a perfect example. Something unrelated to your business might be the clue for trying to find and model the customer you're looking for. Like
exactly.
A pair of Adidas.
Yeah, you never know. You never know what's going to be important, and that's why seeing a lot of data is very important a lot of times to know, hey, there are other things we could potentially be looking at. Oh, my goodness, a pattern just emerged that I never would have realized had we not seen shoe preference or where they like to shop online or where they vacation or so on and so forth.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do you think that – what do you see in the future? What do you see with email? I mean, where do you see it going? You think it's going to just stay the same, or it will just be more of an analytic? Because in its basic form, it's the way it was when it was invented, right? In its basic
exactly.
form.
Yeah, in its
The only
basic
thing
form,
that's
it
changed is
is,
everything we just talked about.
exactly. In its basic form, it
Yeah.
is identical to what it was back in, you know, the mid-90s when, mid to late 90s when it first came about. The only differences have been, oh, now suddenly, well, first it was, oh, you can do anything in it, and then it became, no, actually, we're going to restrict it, and we're only going to, you know, so there have been those
Yeah.
restrictions, a loosening of restrictions, so on and so forth, because it went through the swing. Oh, you can do whatever you want. Now you can't do anything, including CSS. Oh, well, now CSS is okay, and so on and so forth. But I don't see it changing in its in that raw form that it is today, even though there's always these, oh, this new Facebook, I can't remember what they called it, but it was going to be, oh, the new Facebook thing is going to be the email killer. Ooh, Google Plus, what was it called? I can't remember that they just shut down their whole Google that was trying to compete with Facebook. Oh, that's now going to be the email killer. And nothing is ever going to kill email because email has been there from the beginning, and it's what people are used to, what people know, and what people trust because you have full control over your inbox. If suddenly you start getting too much crap, guess what? You go and you create a new email address. I mean, we do it all the time. Everyone's usually got two or three email addresses. And then Google even played into that to be like, oh, well, don't go change your email address. Just add dot whatever, and, you know, how you can add things after your email address and customize your singular Google email address. So many options out there. But in its raw form, it is still email is email is email. And because it is fully controlled by the customer, it will always be that preferred channel. Like I always say, and I'm sure if anyone's heard me talk before and they're bored with this line that I always say, but I get satellite radio so I can skip commercials. I watch shows on DVR or on Netflix, etc., so I don't have to watch commercials. But where I'm okay with receiving marketing communications is in my email inbox because I have full control. If I want to give you my spam email address, I give you my spam email address. If I'm interested in it, I'll give you my email address that I use more regularly. And then I have, not only do I have control on which inbox you're going into, I then have control if I'm even going to look at what you're sending me. Do I care what you've just sent to me? A, I'm going to look at who you are, but then B, what's in that subject line? Is that something that's going to get me to open? And then if you do get me to open, now I've got 3 to 5 seconds where I'm going to make that decision, but it's all on my terms. And so because of that, A, the channel itself will remain because that is the power of this channel. But really where I see email marketing going, not email as a channel, but email marketing, is into that very personalized, customized targeting. So beyond really just targeting and really knowing, predicting, determining what is the best for me. So what I get in my inbox is relevant because as we've seen, Yahoo, Gmail, AOL, et cetera, they've all got spam inboxes. They're already doing some of that filtering for us. And I think for companies to survive in the future, they're going to have to figure out how do I make sure what I'm sending is relevant, that Chris is going to actually open that. You know, if I'm sending, you know, don't send me a Bed Bath & Beyond 20% off coupon because I'm part of the Bed Bath & Beyond program and I get 20% off no matter what. Find what that right point of communication is to me. If you've seen me on the site and saw that I was shopping for chef's knives, but I haven't purchased one, maybe you should start talking to me about chef's knives before I go and find and buy one on Amazon.
Right.
So that's really where I see it going, is getting into that customized approach instead of shotgun blasting me the bed. Did I say Best Buy? I meant Bed Bath. Bed Bath. instead of giving me the Bed Bath full flyer of everything. No, I'm not looking for toaster ovens. You've seen me on your website. You know I was looking at chef's knives. Show me the chef's knives and use your algorithms to determine, oh, people who buy chef's knives tend to buy sharpeners, you know, add those little value adds, but make it where it's valuable to me. And that's where I see email marketing going, is becoming that true personalized, relevant channel versus kind of in today's world, a lot of things are still shotgun blasts. And I'll fully admit, raising my hand right now, I am one of those. There are things that I do shotgun blast out there. I also know that the response rate on those types of things has been plummeting over the past few years as people are more and more in tune with, no, you need to speak to me personally. You should know stuff about me. I have entrusted you with my
Yeah.
email address and some information.
Right.
Therefore, you need to return that favor and do things the right way with me.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's an emotional reaction almost, right?
Yeah, yeah, totally. It is because it is truly trust.
Now, you said something about it even being more targeted in the future. What do you envision? How could it be more targeted?
Yeah, so learning things about me / what is wrong. Why did I trust you to give you my email address? What is it that I am expecting from this relationship? And therefore finding, so like I was saying, instead of that single blast of everything that's on sale that you would put in a newspaper flyer, you're going to use my information about me, what data you can go out there and find about me that I didn't give up to you, model that information and find out, okay, here is what Chris wants. Here is what will resonate with Chris, or at least that all the algorithms give me a 60 to 70% chance is going to resonate with Chris. Let's put that in front of him. Versus, again, that everyone gets the same flyer in today's world. So getting to that, I hesitate to say that one-to-one approach, because I think you hit a point of diminishing return when going one-to-one, and I know this from experience at Hilton, where we did do that, and sure enough, where we had started with, 10 personas, we did great. Going from zero to 10 personas knocked a home run. Then we're like, well, let's take this a step further, poured all this effort and money and time into getting to that one-to-one, and then maybe like a 2% lift for a 90% additional effort. So that was back in the day, though. I mean, now things are much simpler, not simpler, but I mean, now there's
easier.
More data available. There's systems out there that can help with modeling that weren't, I had to build from scratch, work with that company. But like, while I didn't write the algorithm, I wrote the logic for the algorithm to do these things. And it's nowadays there are, AI out there that is ready to go. You just dump some data in and it starts sorting through and figuring things out. But really, that's where I'm talking about that more targeting is really leveraging all that information and having something identify what you're at least more likely of. If I've got five things to offer, I don't want to see five things. Find me the two that I'm going to care about, two or three, and target me accordingly versus just giving me the exact same thing that, my neighbor down the hall that she received. No. Give me what should be for me.
So do you think that there'll come a time when some of this data can be fed in real time about what people are doing?
Whew.
Instead of like trying to find it the way we find it and then it gets updated?
Yeah. So yes and no.
Not in real time, but maybe in...
No, well, I think there are opportunities in real time. So... imagine, and now you got me talking in the future, like Black Mirror era / Altered Carbon, where future state, I could potentially see that there is some sort of way to track. Well, we know it's already happening with phones. If I've got the app and I walk past a beacon, it's going to say, oh, I know where you are, and I can trigger something in real time. I'm going to see where you're walking through my property, and I can hit you with messages accordingly. So be that email, ideally not, though, in that type. In a real-time situation, you're not going to want email. You're going to want more SMS or app pushes, things of that nature that are a little more than a bing, you got an email. So yes, I think, well, A, it's already there, but B, people getting more sophisticated with that, I definitely see that happening and becoming part of, not quite like we always see in the movies. I'm flashing back. What was that Tom Cruise movie based off the Philip K. Dick novel or short story, Minority Report, where he's
Minority
walking past
Report,
and it's scanning his eyes, and then the whole walls are ads. They're all changed. No, I don't think it's going to be at that point. But imagine
that
dialed
movie.
From – that was a really good movie. Dialed down from a 10 to about a 3. And I think that's where you start getting into the real time of, okay, I know at least that you are on my property, and you are staying with me. Therefore, potentially I start, and you've got to do this in a very, again, this is, it's all about the trust. You don't want this whole big brother feel. You don't want it to be creepy. It needs to really resonate with the customer of, okay, I entrusted you with my information, and so what you are going to present to me needs to be relevant to me. So if I'm just walking, for example, let's say I'm walking through Caesar's Palace. If I walk past Giada's, I don't want it, bing, hey, Giada's got to say, unless that is, you know, is relevant to me. Like, and then next I walk past Beijing Noodle House number 9, bing, oh, past the buffet, bing. No, not that level of annoyance, but it's got to be that. Something that, but yes, so real time is a possibility. And then to your other point about real time data, that's a tougher one, because if now we're talking third party external data that could feed in, yeah, I don't know where that, how that could play in. I mean, it would be great to get refreshed. Yeah, well, I think it'd be great to get data refreshed on a regular basis, and as long as you've got algorithms and systems out there that are churning through said data to help develop a persona, develop a plan of action with a customer, that would be ideal, because it would be the most freshest information available to you to then act upon. But I don't know. I'm more of a – That might be a bit much. Might be a lot more processing than it could potentially be worth. That's
what I'm getting at. For,
Yeah,
absolutely. Now, in terms of the frequency, you have said at times that you will email customers multiple times in a day, or other times, as long as it's relevant. So how does that work exactly? Because most people say, well, I'm going to email this guy multiple times in a day. I mean, isn't that bothering the people? Or
Potentially. I mean, there is always a fine line you're walking when it comes to that. But like I always like to say, I can't remember an email I got a week ago, let alone an email I got 3 hours ago. It's not an offensive channel per se, because either it's going to the bottom of my inbox, or I'm just deleting it because it's not relevant to me at this point in time, which doesn't mean it's not going to be relevant to me in an hour from now or 2 hours from now. It's just that, you know, my boss has darkened my doorway and she might be, you know, telling me I need this, that, and the other right now. I need it actually 2 days ago, so hop to – and I'm like, you know, everything else just gets pushed to the wayside, and I'm not going to see that. I'm not going to focus. I'm not going to care about that. I'm just select all, delete. I'm moving on to just focus. And – but that was relevant to me. It just wasn't relevant to me at that time. And so, yes, a reminder of that, or sending it again because I didn't open it or I didn't take action on that is definitely not a bad thing. You just have to do it. You have to make sure you're doing it with being judicious about it. Because, if you're just like – machine gunning emails at people until they open, that's not a good policy.
Yeah, they're not gonna like that.
But being thoughtful about it, of okay, I tried at this point in time, and maybe if it's super urgent, you know, that hey, this is relevant to this person. They've told me they like, you know, mint dental floss, and here's my email about mint dental floss. I sent it to them, and the sale ends at like 2 p.m. tomorrow. Okay, so I'm going to send you that email today at 9 a.m. Oh, we didn't see an open. Okay, well, let's try them again a little bit later today and see. Maybe they just, you know, something came up. Oh, didn't say it. And then hit them again, you know. But there might be another situation where, you know what, this sale goes on for 3 weeks for the mint dental floss. I'm going to try them now. I'm not going to try them again for a week from now, so on and so forth. So it's all relevant to the length of time an offer would be available, as well as, you know, variety of factors. But the point is yes, as long as it's relevant – and as long as it's someone who hasn't already engaged with it, I would say yes. Keep on trying to reach out and extract that bit of value that you can.
Yeah, it's the way data is going is it's just an amazing thing. What makes you so passionate about this area of marketing? What turns you on about it? Because you talk with so much passion about it all the time.
Yeah. I just like it. I love the immediacy of digital. I love the malleability is not quite the word I'm going with here, but that's all I can think of. Just how it can be so unique. So, you know, you can try different things. You can present the same message in 47 different ways. And it's kind of like actors, how a lot of times, like there was a recent thing on Graham Norton, if you ever watched that, it was an amazing show, but it was Tom Hanks running Spider-Man, Tom Holland, through some acting exercises where I think he made him order a cup of coffee, but okay, order it in like a whole bunch of different ways. And it's that same type of thing in digital marketing, is that you can try things in so many numerous ways and get results immediately and know what works and start figuring out what works for whom, and really you feel like you're what I always like to think is, I'm not trying to get a customer to do what I want them to do. I'm helping them figure out what they want to do. And I think that's where that enjoyment in that world of digital marketing for me is I know that through all those different iterations of testing and versioning and whatnot, I'm going to find something that person wants to do and is going to, like I said at the beginning, you know, the Caesars mantra of we inspire grownups to play. It's fun. You know, I want you to find what's fun for you and come in and enjoy yourself. And it's just, whether it was Caesars or at Hilton, it's helping you determine, hey, yes, this is something that is going to enhance my life a little bit better. It gives me a deal to go on a trip to see my family, or I'm going to finally get away for a weekend and come have some fun at Caesar's Palace, or at, you know, at the Link, whatever. I think that's really where it comes from, is A, the channel itself is just a fun channel, or digital itself is so fun, but then B, you're helping people do what they want to do. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting a little too wistful in my old age.
No, everything you're saying is right on. Do you watch other companies and what they do, and have you seen some interesting stuff coming from
definitely
different verticals?
Yes, I do. Have I seen interest? I mean, that's another one of those loaded questions, because I'm always looking at different things, whether it's the design, whether it's the tactics, whether it's the, you know, all these different aspects of it. But yeah, always exploring and seeing who's doing something unique and creative. And for me, it's something that always makes me stop, and or really what's going to make me engage. Because that's one thing about my wife is also a digital marketer, so she and I are talking shop all the time. That's probably another reason why I really like it. Is, you know, this is just how she and I talk every evening. But yeah, and so we're both being in the field, you tend to be a little bit jaded because you know what's being tried, what's going on.
Yeah,
I can see
yeah,
the
yeah.
tricks you're trying
you're
with subject lines.
Customer.
Right.
Yeah.
But that then is when I go, oh, that's interesting. What did you do there? Oh, I haven't seen that before. Like,
right.
You know, so for me, it's a lot of times it's just little things. It's like, what did you do with that design that made it look so unique? And, oh, look how you're doing a great job with, you know, saying a lot with very little, because that's a big thing, at least in the world of email, is you need to be able to open that and scan it pretty quickly. I don't need to read a novel. In fact, I'm not going to read a novel. So who's doing a good job of relaying a bunch of information in a very succinct way? And really, it's just, yeah. So yes, and as far as any specifics, I couldn't even call out a specific because just different things jump out at me over the years. And I remember one thing back when I was at Hilton I thought was neat is, you know, you think of your standard, and it wouldn't work in nowadays because everything, you know, most people are reading their email on their mobile device, but this was back in the days of desktop, and someone had taken their standard, you know, 600 pixel wide email shrunk it down to, let's say, 550, and then hanging off the edge of the email. It's kind of like how you see billboards sometimes have that thing off of the, like a person hanging off the billboard or whatever. And they did that in the email channel. I was like, that is
That's great.
genius. I never thought
It
about,
is.
killing 50 pixels
Taking it
and
out of
just
the
throwing
frame.
something in the white space. Yeah, it was really cool.
Wow.
So yeah, I like fun things like that. It's just fun and exciting to me because I do the same. It doesn't have to be digital. Like I remember the first time I started seeing those at the grocery store, how they started putting things on the floor, full color little wraps or whatever you want to call it. And it's like, oh, this is for sale. I'm like, that's creative. Or even watching sports, like when you started seeing everyone, every place in a sports arena is branded. I'm like, that is a genius move because they're making money by doing nothing, by just covering up a pole.
Yeah,
So
that's amazing, isn't it?
yeah, I love
Yeah,
marketing.
it's incredible. Yeah. It's in your blood, man. It's in your
It
blood.
is.
Yeah, it's in your blood. What are some of the highlights of your career? The stuff that really sticks out in your head?
For me, it was really, really taking what I have always enjoyed is taking something that's either broken or non-existent and turning it into something amazing. And so I always hang my hat on building out, basically bringing Hilton Worldwide into the world of email marketing. That wasn't even a train of thought in their mind really when I started, other than, oh, let's hire this guy to do these couple of things. And within 4 years, it's a division in the organization churning through money that they didn't think was possible. So that's exciting.
Yeah,
Similarly here at
and with such a great
it.
brand.
Right, exactly. And then similarly here
Yeah.
at Caesars is doing a similar but different thing where, taking this channel that I didn't realize when I started that a lot of people are like, yeah, we don't like this channel, and actually turning it into a pretty much the go-to channel of, okay, we need to get some messaging out. Hey, this is extremely effective and cost efficient. Let's get that out the door, and just really building this up into what it is today. And like I was sharing before, I kind of alluded to also making it where the volume we can deploy on limited with limited human resources is off the charts just based on let's leverage the data. We've got a bunch of data. We can get data in data fields, and then we can do amazing things with that. So let's use that to basically self-build, let these emails auto-build, for lack of a better term. I mean, it's not quite automatic, but so that was a big thing for me as well that I like to hang my hat on. Let's see, what other things? You know me, Tino. I love talking. I love bragging. No, I'm. I was just gonna co I was just gonna make something up completely random, like, oh, once I rode a bull for 9 seconds. But
You should have. 9 seconds is a long time.
yeah, exactly.
It's a
That's the thing.
long
I don't know.
time, especially
I
when
once
you're
rode a bull for
it seems
90
like it's
seconds.
short. I know.
Now,
Should we take some calls?
ironically. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, go ahead. Ironically, what?
No, I was gonna say, ironically, I rode a mechanical bull once in my early 20s, and I broke my thumb. So,
Oh
don't drink
man,
and
now you're
bull.
getting that. Don't drink and bowl. Don't drink and bowl. I like that one. Hang on one sec. This is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Chris?
Evening, Tino. Evening, Chris. This is Nick Bossing. How are you guys doing?
Doing great, man. And you?
Good.
Yeah, good. Doing well. I think they pulled the bulls out of most places now because of the liability of people breaking their thumb
Ah,
and drinking.
there you go.
Ah, there you go.
I was a Harris guy myself back in the day, and we had a couple locations that had them, and we just yanked them all out. The Tunica one
Wow.
was really popular.
I'll bet, man.
Unbelievable.
They're fun.
Yeah,
They're
I'm
fun. They just
sure.
break your thumbs.
Yeah.
Hey, when I used to work at Harris Caesars, we usually in month when we'd call up and down for the month. Most of our P&L type activities were hard mail or advertising. Have you seen that they've gone to email a lot more
So most definitely. I
over
mean,
time?
the shift is moving toward email. Not to say direct mail is by no means, and that's a very good point, so thank you for bringing that up. Direct mail by no means is a slouch. it is still a very strong and important channel, just truthfully due to the mix of audience that you tend to see, which can be a lot of people who aren't necessarily using email addresses, or if so, they're not using them regularly. So direct mail is still a strong channel. It is definitely decreased, but it's still there, but it's also a lot of times tied in. It's both an email and a direct mail. That's a good point as well. It takes a village, as I always like to say, or actually as I stole from Hillary Clinton, it takes a village to get these things done. So it's direct mail, it's email, it's search, it's, you know, having a good website experience, et cetera. So yes, it's declined is not the right word. They've decided to shift toward a more digital focused engagement, but direct mail is still, I would say, maybe not king, but it's still royalty.
Yeah, and
Budweiser with all the craft beers coming up. The same question I had is, are you valuing building an omni-channel type of environment, and if so, how are you guys doing it?
Sure. So yes, we. I don't know what I'm allowed to talk about as far as different systems, but we are engaged with a vendor who does everything. And so omnichannel is definitely part of what I am tasked with, is figuring out, okay, well, we've got this data. Let's make it in one fell swoop the ability to – let's say you build out an offer for a guest to say, okay, boom, now let the fingers go out and hit direct mail. Okay, we want to do email. Yes, we want to do a push notification. Okay, we want to follow up with put them on a journey and follow up with a text message and so on. So, yes, omnichannel is definitely where we are headed and kind of doing, but just not in a seamless fashion today.
Okay, ways to go. I have one more question. It's kind of personal from my standpoint. I tend to put a lot of stuff into spam.
Yep.
Are you got a point now where you can tell where somebody maybe just ignoring you or responding from a time to time, or versus where it actually hits spam and
Deal. If someone hits spam, I actually receive that from Yahoo, Gmail, whomever, and I have to legally opt them out. And it's funny you mentioned that, because we're just talking through that. We have occasionally I receive these frantic emails from hosts or whatnot saying, oh my God, this guest is, they keep on saying they get opted out, but they're saying they aren't opting out. And I'm like, well, are they hitting the spam button? And they're like, hold on. And they're like, oh yeah, they keep on hitting the spam button because they don't want this. They want those communications, but they don't want that one. I'm like, there's the problem. Everything is the same. So yes, hitting the spam button, legally I have to opt someone out. As far as what we're seeing from going into the spam box versus ignoring, I'll speak to those separately. Going into the spam box, the way to fight that, there's nothing you can necessarily do about that other than using good email marketing practices, because the way all of the systems work is they have an algorithm and they're all unique. So there's no way to game it, if you will, across the board, but they're all unique to determine, okay, this many emails came in from this sending IP address. What did the majority of people do with that? And again, quote unquote majority doesn't necessarily mean 50% or more. It's just, what am I seeing from an engagement perspective? And if they are seeing that the vast majority of emails that I'm sending are not being engaged with, I'm quickly going to be relegated to the spam inbox. And so that's really where targeting and ensuring relevance is very important, because otherwise, yes, you're automatically going to get flagged as spam. There's the self-reported spam, like you're talking about, that I'm sure weighs into their algorithm, but not as much as that lack of engagement within an email. But then on the separate side of that, which also plays into the lack of engagement, is, of course, I can see how many opens or whatnot I'm getting. And so that tells me a story as well. Okay, these types of emails tend to work well, these types of emails don't, so therefore I should stop doing these ones that aren't performing well, or at least filter that audience down further to those people who are engaging to ensure that I keep my engagement rates at a level that's not going to get me thrown in the spam box.
Well, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. Good evening. Very educational.
Very good. Glad you enjoyed.
Thank
you.
Have a good night. Thanks, Nick. Good question.
Yeah, that was a real good question.
Guy, yeah. Hi, this is Tino Magnetti. Your question for Chris Jenner.
Yeah, hey guys, great conversation, and thanks for having me on.
No problem.
Congratulations with the news. You're
exciting.
The world's largest gaming operator. That's awesome.
Exactly, right?
Yep. So, hey, question for you. The Slack went public last week, and the CEO made a bunch of headlines. I'm sure you're aware that. He said that they are going to replace email within the next 7 years for both business and personal. And the question is, you know, with the, you know, with all these DMs, these direct messaging technology, Google Hangouts, Slack, all the others. What is your take on that? Did you actually think he has somewhat of a valid point, or what do you see as the future of email?
No, so. And here's the deal. I don't see that replacing marketing email. Again, because marketing, I have that full control over that inbox. You're not going to want marketing through Slack or through IM, DM, so on and so forth. That's kind of like text. In America, we hate advertising through text messages because that's more of a private channel. And so I definitely see Slack or any sort of IM type tool being able to potentially reduce work email volume because work email has just gone off the crazy charts. And so there are a lot of times where you can send that IM. You can, you know, do a Google Hangout for a quick meeting and have face-to-face or at least virtual face-to-face in lieu of 57 emails about a topic that you could have solved had you just gotten off your ass and walked down the hall and talked to the person.
Right.
So, yeah, I definitely see it being an effect there, but not from the world of, hey, I need my makeup offers from Sephora so I know what's hot this year and what type of smoky eye I should use this weekend.
Right. And that was interesting. He didn't give any, you know, it was a pretty bold comment without giving any access as far as marketing components of it. I understand it from the work component, but from a social and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. Second question, just a tech nerd out on you a little bit here.
Totally.
Voice marketing. I mean, what do you see in the future of voice marketing when you look at like the Alexas, Google Home, Siri's? Have you guys engaged in that? Have you any thoughts about where kind of we're going in that direction?
Yeah, so in looking at all the research on that, I mean, 98% of people use Alexa for two things. Hey, Alexa, what time is it? And hey, Alexa, play my favorite song. And so it hasn't quite gotten to where people are truly using them as a digital assistant. But I don't know if advertising through those per se is – how that would work versus, like, I know with the one I've got at home, sure, I've loaded the Jeopardy app, so I'll listen to Jeopardy, and now maybe I watch Jeopardy more. We use this one where we use it as a personal assistant to fill out our grocery list and do things of that nature. So I could see if you develop a skill that provides value and then using that information to leverage, yes, there's value in that. But as far as I don't know how advertising through, you know, a voice system would actually – I don't know how that would play out other than being creepy. Like occasionally when you're talking and Alexa goes, I'm sorry, what was that? And you're like, whoa, I didn't say anything that even sounded remotely like Alexa.
That's wild. Or when it just starts playing music.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's yours, Tino. Yours is possessed.
Got Barry White.
Oh man, you're right. Basic stuff.
Yeah, great conversation. I appreciate you guys having me on, and have a good evening.
Of course, thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening. That was cool. All right, let's see who else we got here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Chris Jenner?
Hey, Tino, this is John Bello calling from Experiter. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad. And, Chris, great to hear. I absolutely love the passion in marketing myself. I work for Experiter, which is a multi-channel marketing automation platform. So you're right in my sweet spot with a lot of
nice
answers and questions. So I got a whole list of questions about bull riding here. You ready to go?
Yeah, fire away, because I got zero answers.
No, but back to marketing. I mean, I was listening. You were discussing, you know, the targeting, and one of my first questions was just, how do you balance staying top of mind, you know, with that targeted communication? Sort of the question is, you know, how do you, you know, right message but right time? How do
right
you manage that?
And so that one, yeah, that's a question for the ages, isn't it? Sometimes that's hard to know. I mean, you variety of factors depends on what you're going after. Like, I may know that someone comes to Vegas, they plan their trip every June. So I know that June's the time to talk to them. But to get at that data can be challenging and very complex for a lot of folks. So what people tend to do, which, you know, you can't fault them for, is I'm just going to send you an offer every month. And hopefully when June rolls around, you'll say, oh, yeah, there's that offer I knew I was going to eventually want. I've been throwing it away for a while. So it's not as easy as a lot purport it to be of getting that right message at the right time. That being said, there then become, and like I was saying, it all depends on that messaging, because then if I do know you are on property and you potentially have our app and we've got beacons and so on and so forth, I then or maybe I can even look at how you're doing on the table in real time. Not that any of this is, you know, current state, but then you could easily push a message that, oh, I see you're doing well. Do I want to interrupt you with a message? Or I see you finished playing for the evening, so now I want to, you know, say thanks and get you a free steak dinner or something of that nature. You know, so it's all going to really depend on what really you're pushing and what data is available to you to be able to get at that.
Yeah, no, definitely understand. You know, art and science together, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah. Now, one question just, you know, kind of in reaching these players, or maybe two questions in one, but,
sure,
you know, how much do you leverage marketing personalization? Is that an across-the-board must-have, or are there certain channels you focus on and others you don't?
No, so we definitely – I wouldn't say there aren't any we don't focus on. There may be some that aren't enabled for us to be able to do that well. But, yeah, you definitely always want to – personalization is definitely – it's the future. It's where – well, should be the present of where things are. And so, yeah, we – knowing, you know, Hera's having started really the first big CRM database, at least in the casino industry back in the 90s, needless to say, has a lot of data on customers. And so we try to leverage that to make sure our offers are highly personalized, specific to what your preferences are, so on and so forth. You're going to find that on the web. You're going to find that on your app. You're going to find that in the offers you receive in email, through the communications you have with your host, so on and so forth. So, yeah, it's definitely what we strive for and what we do in many channels. But, you know, I guess technically we can, you know, do it in social, not social, but like display advertising would be a different audience. Of course, we can't talk gambling through that. But, I don't know. I'm just rambling there. But
no, it's
a good ramble.
It's rambling. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
You know, I got time for one more, or is that it?
Absolutely. No, go ahead. I think we got time just for one more.
Okay. No, thanks so much. So I guess, you know, one of the things in our business that we're always trying to help, you know, casinos and properties do is determine what channels each of their players or customers prefer. I'd love to hear more about how you do that.
Sure. So really, we – yeah, I don't know. I know it takes a village. I know it takes multiple channels. Really where we want to get is, what is that right channel mix? Not necessarily that preferred channel per se. Now, I may see, if I see you're dropping
it's
off and you do not
–
exactly. But if I see that you're not responding to email, that tells me – I should stop sending you emails or at least slow that volume down, and I need to attempt to speak with you in another channel. And that's where it gets a little more nuanced because, okay, well, what is that channel? Is it, does a host need to call me up? Depends on my level of play. Or do I get a direct mail piece versus an email? Again, depends on my level of play potentially. So really we're looking at those engagement rates, where people are. But really what the first and foremost thing that you need to look at is what is that blend? And I don't know if anyone out there has that magical solution yet. Of course, everyone out there claims that they do. And, oh, we can, for the small price of $12.3 billion, we can help you figure out what each customer's blend of channels are. But it's really needing
to. How do you know our pricing?
Yeah, that's funny.
So yeah, no, it's really finding that attribution of which channels are working and ensuring you're going after those. But I know that in the numerous companies I've been at, everyone who's come to the table and claims they can do it, no one's yet ever been able to do it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. Great, man. Thank you so much for calling in.
No, thanks for having me on, Tino.
Yeah, have a good night. Chris, that was fantastic. Thanks for so much for coming on, man. I've had a blast.
Of course. My pleasure. Thank you. I
oh,
always have a blast,
forgot.
Tino.
We forgot. We got a panel together July 24th.
Yeah.
Right after the keynote at the Casino Marketing Technology Conference at Caesars Entertainment. So that
Caesars Palace, baby.
Caesars Palace, baby. And we have you and we have Brian Uren, VP of Marketing of Live in Maryland Live. And
right.
We have Mike Donovan, who's the CMO of Ocean Resort. So, yeah, I can't wait for that. You guys are all amazing and fun people.
Two-drink minimum.
Thanks for being on, buddy. Two-drink minimum and a full steak and all-you-can-eat salad bar. That's the real value. But I'll tell you, Bruce Howard is the GM at you're going to appreciate this, at Valley View. But he was food and beverage guy at Caesars between 1984 and 1996.
Oh, wow.
And he worked under, what's his name? It'll come to me. Anyways, the guy who created Caesars. And back then,
Jay
they
Sarno.
Had all the, you know, the Hearns. There was another guy, Mr.
Oh.
No, it was one other guy. I can't remember his name now. I got just one of those brain seizures. Anyways, he said that, they had all the biggest fights, right? They had the Hearns and Hagler and biggest fights. And, all the biggest stars would come in and Julio Iglesias and Sinatra and all these people. And he said that food was the big thing. I mean, they were totally into the food. So what he did at Valley View, they have all-you-can-eat lobster 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. And they're the second largest purchaser of lobster behind Red Lobster in the country.
Wow.
So I said
to
him, I go, Bruce, why are you doing that? He goes, that's how we beat our competition, man, is with the food. We took a big risk, but I told him. And he says, not only that, but they make everything. They don't farm anything out. They control the whole food product.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So it was funny because we were talking about the buffet, but I went up there to meet with him and eat, and it was fabulous.
Yeah.
3 pounds of lobster. It was great. I mean, I've never eaten so much lobster in my entire life, you know. You should get like the little tail. It's like $300 an ounce. You know, it's like, okay, pile it on, man.
Nice.
We're going to eat $5,000 of lobster, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely the way it used to be when I grew up here, is it was like the 99-cent shrimp cocktails and the, you know, full prime rib dinner for like $9.99.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, I think Tenables had one for $4.99, and it was great.
Wow.
Got a prime dinner, like, I think they had it like between midnight and like 7 in the morning or something. You had to go in, after you'd been drinking all night, right?
Exactly.
All these people. You know, this whole this whole joint full of people having prime dinners, right?
Exactly.
For $4.50, crazy. Anyways, good times, man. Thanks a lot for coming on. I really appreciate it.
No problem, man.
It.
Thank
and,
you.
We'll have you back on.
Cool, man.
We'll see you
in a few weeks.
We'll see you in a few weeks, buddy. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that was great, and he's always a fun guy to talk to, and so smart. He's one of the smartest marketers I know. On Thursday, I have Laura Stensgaard, and she's with Coeur d'Alene. She's a tribal member, and she's got a lot to talk about and how they have grown their casino and built a great organization down there. She's a great lady, so it'll be good to talk to her on Thursday. So tune in for that. And then we already talked about the panel, so you know about that. It's exciting stuff. Remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have to have time to listen. Have a good evening, and we'll see you on Thursday.